Hey friends, welcome back to another episode of the In No Hurry podcast. This is your host, Colt Douglas Claiborne. Excited to be back with you this week for a new episode. And I've got a new friend to introduce you to this week. My guest this week is Benicia Ponder. Benicia is an author, a story coach, a book publishing mentor. And really what she does is help authors, writers, other creative people discover and unlock the story that is lurking inside of them and help them bring it to light. As a writer myself, I can tell you that's not always easy. If you feel like you have a story inside of you, you might have a pull or feel a tug to tell it, but getting it out on paper and sharing it with the world is another task in itself. And so that is where Benicia comes in, and she's got a great story about changing careers. She started in the legal profession, and now she has shifted to doing what she is doing currently. There was a lot of fear, trepidation, hesitation, all of those emotions that you might expect to have whenever you leave one thing that you're comfortable with and go to another that is somewhat of a risk. And so I really appreciate her opening up about that and how she got over that fear, and just a good message about taking a risk, following what you're passionate about. But really, there's more to it. There's a practical element of making sure that there's a sustainable element to it financially, that you can build a career out of it. And she really talks about what that experience was like for her. Thanks for tuning in this week. Here is my conversation with Benicia Ponder. I'm excited to be joined this week by a new friend, Benicia. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I am doing well. How are you today?
Doing well. So we're going to talk quite a bit today about storytelling, finding your own story, maybe finding your voice in terms of telling a story as well, and maybe just unlocking what that story is within you that you want to share. For those people that are feeling called to share, this show is really driven toward creatives, and we look at kind of the writing process, the storytelling process, the creative process, whatever the creative outlet is, but you really focus in on helping people find their story. Tell us a little bit about who you are just as a person and what you do and kind of how you arrived at what you're doing professionally as a storyteller, a mentor, kind of a coach as well. Just tell the listeners a little bit about who you are.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to do the Reader's Digest version of that. But I am Benicia Ponder, and I work with creators who want to share their story. So this is a perfect place to have this conversation. I started out my career, though, as an attorney. Wow. And business development strategist, working with small business owners, entrepreneurs, nonprofits, really helping them to get their businesses, their enterprises off the ground and really profitable. So I worked on different things like grant proposals and business plans and all of that. And there came a time when I got tired of that. That was it. So I started to focus more on coaching and speaking. I became a certified personal and executive coach, again, working with people who were doing purpose-driven work. And that's been a theme throughout my entire career span, is working with people who feel a calling to serve in a particular way, and they want to do that to the best of their ability. And so I started particularly as a writer and an author coach, though, in 2017. One of my clients asked me to write her book for her. I'd written a few books of my own. I'd gone through the whole process. And she knew that. And she says, well, Benicia, I want to write a book, but I want you to write it for me. And I was like, oh, let's see how that works. I was in a spirit of adventure at the time. So I said, yes, why not? I think I had read Shonda Rhimes' The Year of Yes. And I was in that whole mm-hmm. moment of saying yes to opportunities. So I said yes to writing her book. And that was Memorial Day of 2017. And by the 4th of July, not only had I written her book, but we'd also published it. And I surprised her in Miami at her book launch event, her book release event. And she was holding her book in her hand about a month after we started the process of writing her book. And about a month later after that, we turned it into an ebook, and She hit the top of the Amazon bestseller charts as the number one release in so many different categories. And from there, I was like, oh, okay, I can actually do this. I can actually help people write their books. And I started getting other people asking me about it. No promotion. To this day, most of my clients have come from word of mouth. So it just snowballed from there. And now I am the founder of Inspirational Authors, which is a full services company that does everything from ghostwriting and editing to helping you to publish and look for ways to market your book.
That's really, really great. You mentioned that initial time of leaving the law profession to doing what you're doing. What was that process like? Because I went through a similar career change. I was a journalist, then I left that to become a teacher. And then last year I left teaching to come back to journalism full time. And each time it was a challenge because it's almost like you're taking a risk, especially if it's something that you thought you might do the rest of your career. So what was that process like for you? And how did you know that that was the right decision to leave the law field and move into this new space of what you're doing?
Yeah, well, I think it was less about knowing if it was the right decision and having the courage to step out. I went to law school, not because I've always dreamed of being a lawyer, but because when I graduated from undergrad, I didn't know what I wanted to do. And my father said, well, you know, you're in school, I'm taking care of you as long as you're in school. So I said, okay, well, let me see how I can get a couple more years of this. my sister was in law school at the time. And I said, well, she could do it, I could do it too. So I went to law school, not because I had aspirations of being a lawyer, but the practice of law is a very esteemed profession. People see it as a status symbol, and you can make a great living as an attorney. And so I ventured into it with that. And so when I made the decision, I can even remember being sworn in. I just passed the bar exam, and I was being sworn in by a judge, you know, into the practice of law in the state of Georgia. And I can remember sitting there with my hand raised, like, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? I don't really want to be a lawyer. But it took me about 6 years to leave that profession because of the ties that I had, because of the fear I had of doing something that other people didn't understand. When I left my career as an attorney, I would tell people, oh, yes, no. So now I'm a speaker and a coach. And they looked at me very strangely because they didn't understand why I would leave a real job for something like speaking and coaching. And this was before coaching was so popular. And I said, well, this is what I'm passionate about. This is what I want to do. And I got a lot of backlash, especially from people who know me for a long time, because saying I'm an attorney, oh, wow. Oh, I'm you know, I want to know more about that, to saying, yes, I speak and I coach for a living. And they didn't know how to wrap their minds around that. So it was more of the fear of judgment that kept me in a place where I didn't want to be. Mm-hmm. For 6 years. And when I finally moved and transitioned into more of helping people in the coaching and the speaking and writing my own books kind of thing, it was a freedom. But then there was also the challenge of, how do I support myself with this? Because I had steady income, right? Good income as an attorney. But then there was me speaking and coaching, and that was a whole another level. So it was a journey of not only stepping out of fear, but also realizing that I have to take what I'm doing seriously. I have to make sure that I treat my passion not just like a hobby, but like a business too. So it was a really big period of transition and change.
I love this because I don't know if you're familiar with Bob Goff, author Bob Goff. So he's written in a couple of his books about how he started his career as a lawyer. He was working in the law profession, and then he also was an adjunct professor at Pepperdine University at their law school. And in his latest book, it's called Undistracted. Anybody listening that hasn't read that book, I would highly recommend it. But he talks in there a lot about changing his career and that what was right for him at one time of his life, being a lawyer, was not what was the right fit for him at a certain time of his life. And basically it was this permission that he was giving readers that, hey, you are allowed to change your mind. You're allowed to change your career. You're not married to this profession, this or whatever it is. It doesn't have to be a profession. It could be a hobby. It could be anything. Like, you're human and your interests will change, and what you feel passionate and led to in some ways probably should change based on what your life experiences are. And so what advice would you give? Like, you mentioned the fear that you felt, and I think I felt the exact same thing both when I left journalism initially and certainly last year when I was leaving teaching again. Because again, teaching doesn't have the same income that a lawyer does, but there's a certain level of saying, right, I'm a teacher, and then you feel a lot of pride about that job versus saying I'm a journalist. Not everybody looks at journalists the same way that they look at teachers, with a, you know, kind of a, in an admiration way. Not that you should do a job for admiration, but it's different. And there was some fear in that where it was just harder to explain, like, why I was making this change again. So the people that are listening to this, that, or even just people you've worked with that have felt similar fear, and it may not even be leaving a career. It may just be taking a risk and doing something that they're not sure what to do. It's, you know, essentially leaving an area of comfort to do something that's out of their comfort zone. You went through that. So what advice would you give to people that are maybe feeling held back because of that fear?
You know, there comes a time when your comfort zone becomes uncomfortable, where you just feel in your heart that I'm doing this, I'm okay with this, but I'm not okay with this. And it's the moment that you have to make that decision of, do I want to step out? Do I want to actually live and not just have a life, but actually live? And so what I tell people all the time is to, number one, start with the idea of what you want. Now, I learned that lesson because I did not do it, you know, that way. This is hindsight 2020 vision, right? Advice here, but definitely have a vision of what you would want to do. Understand that it's a process, but have an idea. I want to leave this, but I want that. And really understand what that is for you. And also create a plan. Again, I just went cold turkey. I said, I'm not taking any more legal clients. I'm closing down my practice. I went cold turkey and jumped all the way in to speaking, to coaching, to writing. And I woke up one morning, 6 months into this whole journey, and had $3.11 in my bank account. Because although I was doing what I love to do, and I was excited about it and really good at it and helping clients, I was helping more clients as a coach than I had as an attorney. However, I was not charging. I did not have a plan, a business plan, for how I was going to make that venture profitable. So I was charging less than I should have charged. I was working way more than I should have been working, all of those things. And I, at that moment, I had to say, okay, what am I going to do? I had to create that plan. And so I encourage people who are, especially if it's a career decision or it's a big decision that you're making, you're moving from one comfort zone and transferring to a different level, take the time to kind of map it out and go slow. Even as you're in your comfort zone, do little bits and things, taking smaller steps as you are stepping out. Don't just jump into it. build the process, and don't beat yourself up about how long it takes you, right? I have talked to a lot of people who say, I should have written my book, or I should have done this a long time ago. I really wanted to do it. I should have gone after that goal a whole long time ago. And they beat themselves up because they haven't done it yet. Well, you have the chance to do it now. Take the smaller steps, work on it a little bit at a time. And before you know it, you'll have that next level. But if you stay in that place of it's been too long or it's too late, or I'm so mad I haven't done this yet, then you're never going to move forward. So, you know, that's my last piece of advice for this question, yeah. But really to take it step by step, really understand that there's no timeline, but as long as you're moving forward, you're going to get there.
Yeah, that's really good advice. And you mentioned, I mean, just the financial component of it, because I think for creative people, it's no secret that creative jobs, it's hard to make money, especially whenever you kind of go out on your own like you did. It's very difficult to build a client base or just a workload enough that can match whatever your career was that you're leaving. With you specifically, something like law, you know, law school is not cheap. And so a lot of people have a lot of law school debt. And so facing that idea while also like, hey, I really feel called to take this risk, but also I've got this massive debt to pay off. Even people like me that have undergrad debt, you know, leaving what might feel like a comfortable job to do something like that can be a challenge for some people. So how much did you weigh that? I assume that was part of the fear that you felt as well. And how did you navigate that in your head to where like, I feel this is what I'm being called to do. I trust this is going to work out, and really seeing the long-term vision versus I think a lot of people get short-sighted and they really struggle to get past the initial pain that they're going to feel, both from an uncomfortability standpoint, but also from a financial standpoint. So what was that like for you? I mean, you mentioned that you said you had $3.11 in your bank account. So I think a lot of creative people can probably relate to that experience. And yeah, it's very real. It's hard. I mean, not to use the starving artist trope, but I mean, it is real. Like it's hard to make money at first, especially whenever you're going off on your own to be a writer. So just from that aspect, I asked this just out of like personal curious reasons, because I'm doing some research on this for a project I'm working on myself. So I'm curious just anecdotally what this was like for you.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a whole concept of, for me, it was, I treated my legal career as a business. I had my own firm. I did not necessarily work for, you know, a larger firm. So I understood from the very beginning how to run a business, how to build clients, how to set up marketing and things like that. So I knew that, but I treated my law firm as a business. When I switched over to my purpose-driven, passion-driven work, it was like, I love this. I could do this. This is my passion. And it became more like an expensive hobby. So I did not follow those same structures as far as setting up the proper billing systems, you know, making sure my client intake was correct. I didn't set up those systems. And so the key for me, and I actually, that was my second book, was Prospering Your Purpose. How do you make sure that your purpose-driven business is thriving and successful, not just purposeful, but also profitable. So it really is a matter of being able to see your creative endeavor as a business. So you have to wear multiple hats here. You have to wear that creative hat, but you also have to wear that CEO hat. And for me, it was flipping that switch to say, okay, Benicia, you're going to be your own client for a while. You're going to, you know, from that $3.11 was a wake-up call, because I couldn't even go to Starbucks and buy a cup of hot chocolate with that, right? it was a wake-up call to me. And I faced the decision, okay, Benicia, are you going to continue with this purpose-driven work, or are you going to go back to something that's going to pay the bills? I had to make that decision. My decision was I wanted both. I wanted the purpose and I wanted the profits. I wanted to be able to make a living doing what I love to do. And so I got very serious about what that looks like. I got very serious about the income I needed to create. I got very serious about conversations with my clients. I also got very serious about really being articulate with sharing what I do. And what I did in a compelling way, being able to share my message, creating content around my message, being able to talk to other people about what I was doing. And I became very serious about that, so that it was a balance between the purpose and then doing profitable things in my business.
Yeah, that's really good advice. And I know for me, like I don't have the business mindset. So that's always been a fear of mine, is that I don't have that skill. If I ever, you know, had a dream of going out on my own, and I'm sure other creatives feel this way, that is a big part of it, because you don't want to just jump in, like you said, and right. have the ideas. They may be really, really good ideas, but yeah, you got to be able to execute them, and you've got to be able to make a living off of them. Because yeah, it's as much of a calling as you feel, it's still at the end of the day, you got to have income to pay the bills and everything. But I guess first, that is all really good stuff. And I guess first, let's even go back then, though. When people feel that itch, they feel that tug, a calling to write a book, or maybe they're a musician, hey, pursue music, you know, whatever the creative outlet is, you'll feel that tug, and there's probably some resistance that you'll put out yourself, and then you'll feel some resistance once you start trying to pursue that. The world will always have some way of giving you resistance. So in terms of writers specifically unlocking the story that they feel called to tell, this is something that you've talked about. How can they go about discerning what it is that is put on their heart to write, or the story to tell? I know that's a very big question. And I guess, what are some of the first steps to take? What are some of the first steps to take? Like, hey, I've got this idea. Like, is it really just kind of getting into like journaling, getting the thoughts out on paper, seeing how they look? Just, I mean, I know what my process was like, but how have you coached other writers to do this?
Yeah, absolutely. So I use what I call the illumination blueprint when I'm working with a client, helping them to go from that idea all the way to published. And the very first part of that is to get clear about what it is that you're sharing, mastering your message. That's the very first part. And understanding what that looks like. What is your message? What are you trying to say? Who are you speaking to? One of the first things I tell people all the time is that your message is not for you. Your story, yes, you've gone through those experiences. You've had the events happen to you, but the story that you're telling is not for you. It's for your reader. So very early on in the process, getting to understand why you're sharing this, that really is an anchoring piece of being able to move past that resistance that we often feel, because we're all going to have it. From my first book to the most recent book I just published in March, every book, I felt that resistance. I felt as if, okay, I have this idea. It's really great. I know I can help people. But then the next thought is, who wants to read this? Who needs this kind of thought pattern going on? And every time I had to go back to my why. Why am I writing this book? And my overall why is always to illuminate the world with messages of hope, healing, breakthrough, and transformation. But for each book, there's a separate why. Who am I writing this for? Why do they need it? How will their lives be different because they read my book? All of those things, anchoring yourself into that why and framing your focus does a lot to help keep you going. And then once you have that general idea of what it looks like, create a map. Create a map of what you want to say. People call it an outline, but some people are resistant to the term outline. So I say a map, but create an idea of what you want to include in it. And jot that down. Begin to put some structure to it. I find that when you have a structure to what you want to write, you avoid writer's block. You avoid spinning your wheels with what to say when you do that in the beginning. And one of the tricks I love to use with my authors is to have them to create that map or outline, if you will. And the sections are in terms, write it as a question. Instead of saying, you know, five principles, you know, say, what are the five principles for creating your life, your best life? How does this principle help you to grow spiritually? How does this principle help you to benefit others? I'm just going off the top of my head here, but when you do it in question format, your brain automatically thinks of answers to those questions, and it's a prompt for you to write. So that helps to ease you into the consistency of writing. And, you know, for those people who just have the idea, I think these steps kind of help you, you know, getting clear on your focus, getting understanding about who you're writing for and why you're writing this, and then creating that map of what you want to write sets you up so that as you are writing, you're able to be consistent with it.
Yeah, that's great. I went through a writing intensive a few years ago with one of my favorite authors, and she basically did that where she was like telling the people to go through and create a roadmap essentially of your life. Mm-hmm. And basically you draw, and like I drew it out, and it almost looked like a board from the Game of Life or something, where it had just like it was different. Yeah. What she would call tent pole moments. So you think about a tent pole, mm-hmm. that holds up a tent. Like, what were the big, mm-hmm. moments of your life that are shaping the story? And it really helps you see it out. And I've even done it where I've gotten a big poster board, and I'll put some of like overarching ideas, and then underneath each section I'll have like some, mm-hmm. Smaller ideas and try to organize it that way. So yeah, I think my advice would be to add, you know, visual elements to it as well. Like I would do some color coding.
Yes.
Like this is the main idea. This is kind of a sub idea. Where do I want to go from here? So mm-hmm. I think everybody kind of has their own style, but I think in general, those are really good tips. Yes. One thing too, the one feedback that I've gotten in my writing process is just like, you know, the ideas may be good, but somebody else has maybe already said it. It's not unique. It's not something that's relatively new, I guess. So I think for new authors, or really even veteran authors, that can be tough, to where it's like you have this message that you want to share, but maybe somebody else has already shared it. There may be a book that's already similar. So what advice have you given your authors in terms of how to separate their ideas to make them stand out, to make them more unique than what they've maybe come with originally?
Yeah, so that's where your story comes into play, because to be honest, yeah, it's all been written about before, right? Yeah. I mean, there are marketing books, health books, business development books, spiritual development books, right? It's all been written before, but it's your story in it. I look at, for instance, the church and preachers who preach sermons from the Bible every single week. Now, of course, right? It's from the Bible. Those same sermons, those same scriptures have been preached over and over and over and over again. But there are nuances. There are new insights. There are new revelations. There are new perspectives. There are individual stories and how they relate to that congregation, right? And so the same is true when we're writing our books. We might be writing on a general topic of confidence or purpose or health and wellness, but our individual stories, our individual life experiences give that unique perspective. You give it a new, you know, I think people try to be novel and try to come up with a new principle for weight loss. Well, the weight loss is the same, right? You eat less calories, you move more. It's the same thing. Yeah. What makes it different? It's your way of moving more. It's your way of eating less. And so that is what you add to it. You add you. You add your experiences, your knowledge, your expertise, your insight. And that is what makes the book novel and new.
Yeah. And that's a tough, tough thing for people to discover. And it, like for me, that's taken years to figure out exactly how to make my book that I'm working on stand out, and the ideas that I have stand out, because a lot of it, like you said, the Bible says that there's nothing new under the sun.
Right.
And mm-hmm. and it's a way of telling it and sharing that story and illuminating, to use your word, illuminating your experiences and your stories. So I think that's really good advice. What are some other just main tips that you give to writers or creative people as they're getting going that maybe was informed by your own journey? Like things that you mentioned, things that you wish you would have done differently, like not just mm-hmm. stopping cold turkey and going into it, but what are some other things that you have taught or coached writers and other people on as they're starting that you had to learn the hard way from your own experiences?
The first and most important is to begin developing an audience, to begin developing your community even before your book is published. So as you're writing, start to market. You market your book from the very beginning. And when I say market, not, oh, my book is coming in 3 days. Oh, you know, I'm writing this book. No, what I mean is sharing parts, not only sharing parts of your journey towards writing, but also positioning yourself as someone that people want to engage with around that topic. So if you're talking about health and wellness, start sharing content, start building community with other people who are interested in that. Because what happens a lot of times, and this happened with my first couple of books, you write a book and then you release it and you have a few people, your family, people who love you, to buy it. But when it comes to other people outside of that inner circle, it's crickets, right? So you want to make sure that when you're releasing your, you know, as you are writing, you also have an eye towards that community. It does help you to get the book done. It helps with accountability, but it also helps you to make sure that when you release, you're going to have the impact you want to make. So that's my first piece of advice. Don't leave the marketing and, you know, of your book to the very end. Sprinkle that throughout the process. And then I would also just say, don't get so caught up. And we talked a little bit about this. We're talking about what makes your book unique, but don't get so caught up in making it perfect the very first time you write. I just completed a storytelling workshop working with authors, and we were doing the writing time, the writing portion. And over, the participants kept asking me, okay, well, how does this sound? How does that sound? How do I get started? And I'm like, hey, just write it. It's okay. Just write it out. Because what was happening with them is that they were in their heads trying to create the perfect words in their head before they put it on the page. But here's the thing. It's not going to be perfect in your head. It's only going to be, it's never going to be perfect. I'll say right. that. Yeah. But it's only going to be good for you to put it out into the world when you get it out. In your head, what sounds good in your head might not sound good on the page. So I encourage people just to write. If you're writing a timeline of your life, just write out all the facts. Just write this happened, then that happened, then that happened. Just write it out and then go back and edit. Don't try to edit in your head before you even write, because that is a recipe for disaster. You'll be paralyzed and you'll never get anything out. So those are my two suggestions. Make sure that you have an eye toward building that community, building relationships, building a audience of people who want to buy your book when you publish it, and then write before you edit. Okay. Yeah. Write before you edit, and then you can always go back and make changes later.
Yeah. And I think a big part of this too, and something that I struggle with, is just the idea of discipline, of making sure that you're staying with the craft regularly. I go through seasons where I don't write a ton, other seasons where I'm working on it quite a bit. And I know when I've spoken with other writers, that is one of the main things that they speak about, is this idea of discipline and making sure that they're always intentionally creating time in their schedule to work on this. And I think writing a book can be a very overwhelming task. It's very, very difficult. And especially like for me as a journalist, I'm so used to much quicker, smaller type of writing. A book is more like a marathon, and it's a lot more challenging for some people than writing a news article or anything that's, you know, a blog post, whatever it is. And it can be really intimidating at times, and almost to the point where it's very easy to just give up, or at least delay it. Like, well, I'll do that tomorrow when I have more time. Well, then tomorrow comes and then something else pops up on your schedule. Okay, well, I'll do that tomorrow when I've got more time. And it's very easy, I have found, to continuously put off certain tasks that feel daunting and replace them with very simple, smaller tasks. Like, I don't know if you've ever read the book Atomic Habits by James Clear. I read it at the beginning of the year. And he talks about that, about how like it's very easy to just fill time with things that are easy and much more mindless than the actual craft and the discipline. And then what happens is you don't build that discipline, you don't build that muscle. And so it's really all about being there and making habits and not making excuses, essentially. So very long way of asking, I mean, what are your tips on finding and building and maintaining discipline in your writing craft?
I definitely agree with everything you just said, because it is important to have that consistency. One of the things that I have been working on personally is to develop that writing habit, because I'd gotten out of writing my own books. I was writing for everybody else. I was helping them publish. And then I looked up and I'm like, oh, it's been some years since I've written my own book. So what I have started to do is to have a daily discipline of writing. One of my mentors recommended 2 pages a day. And so sometimes I say, okay, I'm going to do 2 pages a day. But for me, it's more of a word count. So I say, okay, I'm going to get to 1,000 words today. If I do more, absolutely amazing. But I at least write those 1,000 words, and it allows me to have some progress towards my writing and also not feel overwhelmed, because those are the two things that really stop a lot of people, right? You feel like you don't have enough time to sit down and write an entire book, so you don't even try. But if you break it down into smaller increments, and I just look at my outline, whatever I'm working on at the time. I look at the outline and say, oh, okay, I think I'll write about that today. And I look at, because my outline is like prompts, so I can answer a specific question in 1,000 words and I'm written for the day. It keeps me going forward. I get to see the progress that I'm making. And at 1,000 words a day, you know, in a month, I have 30,000 words. Of course they need to be edited. Of course, you know, I go back, but if you break your writing goal into small bite-sized chunks that you do every day, then it's a lot more doable. It's definitely a lot more doable. And so I just recommend that people would take their writing goal. And this is, you know, strategy, planning, all that kind of stuff. If you're saying, hey, I want my book to be 50,000 words, or if you say, I want my book to be 100 pages, okay, then what does that look like? Do you have, you know, if you're going to say every day or 5 days a week, well, what does that look like? Does that look like I write for 20 minutes a day? Does it look like I write for a certain number of pages a day or a certain number of words a day? But get in your mind, what can you do? What's the least amount that you can do in a day? And do that every single time, and build that habit. Build the habit. And before long, you'll get into the groove of writing. And I'll say this as a subpart to that. Don't feel like you have to feel like writing. that's one thing that people say, well, I don't necessarily feel like it. A part that, you know, sometimes I don't feel like taking a shower, but I do, because I know the benefits of smelling appropriate around people, right? So, or brushing my teeth. I might not feel like brushing my teeth, but I brush my teeth, right? It's the same way. You might not feel like it, but if you develop that habit, if you say, okay, every morning or every evening or every lunch hour, I'm going to write for 30 minutes. And you just do that, even when you don't feel like it. In those moments when you don't feel like it, those are the moments where you may go back to your outline and choose one of your topics to just write, hey, this is what I would want to write if I knew what to write, right? Yeah. But just do it, even when, you know, keep, like you said, make it a habit, keep it going and be consistent with it.
Yeah. I love that you mentioned just bringing it up into small bite-sized chunks. I know that that's what I've tried to do. And that's advice I've heard from other people as well. And I think if you're really feeling overwhelmed, it's a very good way to make it a much more approachable task because you're not having to tackle it all in one day. You mentioned how you wrote a book between Memorial Day and July 4th. That maybe is not the normal timeline for a lot of people. So it's not that you have to write it that quickly, but it is, I think, helpful to break it down into those bite-sized chunks. As you have, I don't know, looked back on this career pivot you've made, what's one or two of the most rewarding parts of this that ever since you left the law profession to doing what you're doing, what have you found to be the most rewarding aspects of it?
The most rewarding aspect is always the joy of seeing someone else birth their dreams. Being, you know, the midwife, so to speak. Yeah. Watch, you know, because when you're writing, it's like you're birthing a baby, right? Whether you're a man or a woman, this is a birthing process you can engage in. But it's really about seeing just the joy and seeing how awesome it is. I get the pictures, I get the messages, I get all of the things, seeing my authors to get their messages out in the world. And for the people I work with, it's not just about publishing a book. It's about inspiring lives. It's about creating transformation. It's really about sharing your heart on the page. And so for my authors, this is a process that's taken a lot out of them. It's a process where it's been a journey. And to see that final product and to see their accomplishments, that's the first level of it. And then the next level of it is when they see how they are touching lives with what they've shared. The messages where I get screenshots of email messages or text messages where someone has told them how much their book has meant to them. That's the next level of it. And so I get so much joy, not just because I'm helping one author, but I'm helping countless other people to experience something amazing. And that's the best part. That's the best part for me.
Yeah. I love that. That's awesome to hear. So I mentioned this before we recorded. The name of the show is In No Hurry. And I created it just out of a super busy season and kind of still living in busy seasons. I think we all are. But for you, when life does get crazy, it gets a little unruly. What are some of your go-to habits or just things that you do to slow down and kind of recenter your life?
My first go-to habit is napping. pressing pause, and especially when I find myself spiraling. I'm not sure if you've ever had the experience of feeling like you were just like going at top speed and everything else around you is like going really, really fast. And when I have that feeling, I realize, okay, you're not going to get more done by forcing yourself to keep going. You need to stop. And so I take a nap. Sometimes it's a 20-minute nap. Sometimes it's a nap to the next day. It just all depends on what my body needs at that moment. But when I wake up, I feel a sense of rejuvenation. I feel a reset. And I am ready to tackle with a fresh brain. When you're creating, you don't realize how much of a toll that takes on you energetically, especially, you know, whether you're writing, you're creating music, you're creating art, whatever it is, it takes a toll on you energetically. So you have to have some kind of way to refresh. And so for me, naps are that. I've also started to set boundaries around my work time. In the same way, you know, because I love what I do, I could work every waking hour. And there were periods of time when that's what I was doing. I was always working. I worked from my phone. I worked from my laptop. I worked at the beach. I would take my work to vacation and I would work because I love it. I can work from anywhere, you know, all that kind of stuff. But again, it's draining because you're pouring out. You're pouring out. You're pouring out, and you're not bringing anything back in. So I put boundaries around my work time. In fact, after we talk today, I'm done for the day, and I'm going to spend some time with my family. So having other outlets of expressions beyond just what you do as your work is very important. So even if that work is creative, right? Even if you're sculpting all day, or you're writing all day, or you're dancing all day, have a separate outlet, have another form of expression where you can do something totally different to take your mind off it. And then my guilty pleasure, I love cozy mysteries. So I'll curl up with a good book and just zone out for a little while.
That's great. I love all of that. So if people want to connect with you or inquire about the services you offer, they want to get in touch with you about maybe potentially helping, having you help them write their book, what are the best ways to connect with you, whether that be social media or online?
Yes. So inspirationalauthors.com is the hub. So you can go there and learn all about what I do, projects that are coming up, as well as spotlights of my authors, all those kind of things. And you can also schedule a free consultation with me if you are thinking about starting your book, or you've written a book and you're like, what do I go next? All of those things, you can schedule a free consultation with me. And that link is on the website, inspirationalauthors.com.
Okay. Well, Benicia, thank you so much for coming on the show today. It was great talking with you. Great hearing your story, and love obviously talking about creativity and the writing craft and finding your story, all of it. So thanks again for sharing your insight.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for tuning in this week. Hope you enjoyed this conversation with Benicia and found it beneficial, especially if you are a writer or a creative person, you have some kind of a project that you're working on. Heed this advice. There's a lot of great advice in here from Benicia. If you are wanting to get in touch with me regarding the show, if you have a guest you'd love to suggest, or whatever it is, you have some feedback, I would love to hear from you. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Cole Claiborne, and on Facebook, I am Cole Douglas Claiborne. And you can check my website out, coleclaiborne.com, and there you can subscribe to my Substack. That is a great way to stay in touch with what's going on with the show and other things. You can email me at coleclaiborne@gmail.com. Plenty of ways to contact me. Would love to hear from you and would love to stay connected. And as always, I hope you find some time this week to relax and not be in a hurry. And we'll catch you next time.